podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
That this was a laughable suggestion to try and organise a tournament this way in the first place, before
Correct.
A pandemic.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Planet FPL, the world where everything revolves around Fantasy Premier League. But not today, James. It's not FPL related today. It's People's Poll Day on a Monday.
Oh, thank God I don't have to talk about anything involving Spurs till tomorrow.
A lot of listeners are just tuning in, ready and waiting for it. But let's just keep them waiting. Let's just tease them. It's all coming tomorrow. Plenty of it as well, no doubt. Today we're taking a slightly different tack to People's Poll. A few interesting topics that have come up that you put out for a vote, and we have a winner.
We do. There were three options in the vote that went out on Twitter on Sunday morning. The first was the implementation potentially of the policing bill. Okay, what does this matter to football and what is it? Well, in short, basically you can get a criminal record by being a nuisance is what I've read into. And this involves a lot around, people may have read this, about protests gathering in large groups, etc. What do football fans do, Serge, sometimes when they're not happy about things?
GSB out.
That's only when you start losing games. No. It's potential that large gatherings of, I don't know if you wanted to protest about something about football or marches, because obviously what you'd obviously potentially get as well, and I guess this wouldn't matter overseas, but obviously quite often football fans congregate in large groups around main places in city centres, etc., away fans around train stations, that kind of thing. And it would potentially alter fan behaviour in the future if it goes through, I think. I think football fans would have to be very conscious about who they're hanging around with and what they're doing, basically. Another option was social media blackouts, which I think at one point we thought was going to win this poll, but just missed out.
I was quite excited about that one winning because of obviously what happened to me.
Yeah, because you got banned again at the weekend.
but it didn't. I mean, we'll talk about it for 2 seconds in a minute. But the winner of the poll was?
The organising of Euro 2020 tickets and venues.
Do we call it Euro 2020 or 2021?
It's still being called Euro 2020. So
that's because all the merchandise, they don't want to reprint it.
Well, yeah. Your sticker albums at 5 stickers per 90p. I mean, who's getting that for their kids? Good luck, parents out there, if you want to get your kids' sticker book filled up for the Euros.
Forget about it. The social media blackout was an interesting one because, again, I got banned on Saturday. And it was because you obviously tweeted that you were doing a watch-along for the Patreons. I wanted to retweet that. And my tweet included the word Pogba and the monkey emoji, which was not aimed at Pogba, obviously. It was aimed at the naughtiness of you having to go live during a Spurs game. I guess the cheekiness of it is what it was about. And I got auto-suspended. So when I put that tweet out, and twice I tried to do it, it showed on my timeline. But when I sent you the link, it wouldn't show. And you were like, you haven't retweeted this. I was like, I definitely have, because I could see it. It didn't even get past the point of being published. So no one saw it.
So no one reported you?
No. It wasn't someone, trying to report me for anything. It was automatic. And when that was highlighted to me the day after, I was like, you know what?
That's
probably, 0.01% of people like me innocently get caught up. But 99.99% of people that use the word Pogba and the monkey emoji in a tweet are probably being racist. And so, sod it, I'll take it on the chin. If that's what it is to stop the other idiots, I don't mind that. And so the social media chat was really interesting, where I went from Twitter, why are you being such a bunch of over-policing idiots and not actually looking at the case, to, you know what, if that's what it takes to stop and stamp out some of this stupidity, it's similar in the same way that you're happy to give your driving license or passport. I'm happy for certain things not to be allowed to be said if the majority of the time they're used in a bad context. And would have had a really interesting debate about that, which will rear its head again, because it does all the bloody time. Unfortunately.
It's day to day now, unfortunately, players being abused, etc. Heung-min Son again yesterday, there's other players over the weekend. I think Liam Moore of Reading was tweeting some of the screenshots that he'd had. He was like, this is daily and weekly now. there's obviously a number of clubs. I think Rangers, Birmingham and Swansea have gone on a week-long social media ban, which is all well and good, but I feel like there could have been a lot more power in this if the clubs had organised to do it together, which certain clubs just can't do it at the moment. I'd reference to you, Tottenham and Man City couldn't go on a social media blackout at the moment because there's a Carabao Cup final in 13 days and the two sets of fans need to know if they can get a ticket or not. So it wasn't a case that everybody could just follow and go, yeah, we're going to do a social media blackout for 7 days. I think the principal idea of it is good. And I think to myself, is it the sort of thing that maybe I should do? But then what's the good of that? What am I actually going to achieve rather than just being a principal person saying, yeah, I'm gonna do it too? It's not actually benefiting anyone, is it? The fact that Planet FPL shut their social media for a week.
No.
I think with better organisation, all the clubs could have done it. There's certain players doing individual things. I know Jordan Henderson's let a company take over his social media for a week. I think everybody, to long story short, just wants the social media companies to deal with things better and act on this immediately. I know there's a lot of people that are against verification of, say, Twitter accounts or Instagram accounts. My opinion would absolutely be, yeah, sign me up. I'll give you my driver's license or something. Not a problem at all.
Exactly. But like I said, it will rear its head again because it continuously always does. Let's talk about Euro 2020. It's fast approaching, and the topic is around the venues and the organisation of tickets and how it's going to work with COVID and all of that going on. One of the things I just would point out on Euros, I think now, I just want to get it out there because I don't know where else we'll talk about it. In the past couple of weeks, you've said that you don't think Jesse makes the final squad. I think as each week passes, it's getting harder and harder not to leave him out.
He's on fire.
And he's different to the other players. Where you've got technically gifted, skillful little players in Foden, Grealish and so on, his carrying of the ball is very different to some of these guys, direct running. So I think he should be making the squad. If they were picking the squad tomorrow, I think he'd make it.
Would you put Lingard in over, you mentioned two players there, Foden and Grealish. If Foden and Grealish are fully fit, would you put Lingard in ahead of either of them?
Maybe not ahead of either of those two. No.
Would you put him in ahead of Mason Mount?
No.
Then there you go. That's the problem.
No. But I would take all of them. The difficulty is hitting that. Look, Marcus Rashford has had an all right season.
We could all list the squad that had 13 attacking players. You can't take that many attacking players.
But it's about making a difference, like players that can make a difference. I'd take him over Calvert-Lewin, for example. I'd take him over Bamford, for example. I don't know about Bellingham.
You're comparing strikers now. That means you want to take...
I'd take him over Bellingham, for example.
There is a case to say that if you're taking people like Rashford and Sterling, who presumably will go fully fit, there is a case to say, do not take a second forward. But I think that if Harry Kane did get injured and you've got no other striker in the squad, it's just going to be painful. I think back to 2006 when Eriksen took Owen, Crouch, Walcott and somebody. I'm not even sure if there was another one, but obviously Owen got a serious injury.
Rooney wasn't around then, was he?
Oh, Rooney. Rooney wasn't fully fit. Owen did his ligaments against Sweden. Crouch was just a target man, which was useful for a certain point in a certain game, but not really starting. And he took Walcott instead of Defoe, right? Mm. And he never used Walcott. Mm. So I don't think you can cheat positions like that. So if it's going to be Calvert-Lewin, for example, I don't think you could take Jesse Lingard over Calvert-Lewin and only take one striker just because Lingard's...
But I think what it comes back down to is your system. Like, pick a system and get the best players for your system. And if the system doesn't involve a ball-carrying running midfielder like Lingard, then don't take him. But if he fits the system, you know, take him. But yeah, it's very difficult at the moment because some of these other players are performing particularly well as well. So exciting times. We'll all get excited. We'll all put some money on at the start of the tournament and we'll all be crying at the end of it. Where are we watching these games?
We're probably at home. We'll only be putting money on England if Jesse Lingard's not in the squad. Listen, we'll go out as soon as we meet a good team as per what normally happens, which for the info, different time and place during the summer will probably be in the last 16. But I want to bring it up because there was a big meeting last Wednesday. Well, I say meeting. The 12 host cities for the European Championships were asked on Wednesday to submit information in terms of how many fans that they can accommodate for games at European Championships at summer. Now, what's come out of that is that there are four venues who potentially may lose their rights to host matches. Dublin could be one of them, because the Irish FA cannot commit to a certain percentile of people that they're going to allow in for games. What UEFA have essentially asked the 12 cities to provide confirmation of is that they'll be able to accept at least 25% of capacity of stadiums, which eight of so have done, and some have gone above that, which we'll come on to. But Dublin's turned around at the moment and said, we can't commit to that. Now, the first conversation there is, I think, that's right, isn't it? That Dublin say, we're not sure. And they're being pressured. What do we think of the idea at the moment? UEFA saying, we need 2 months before tournament, we need some sort of confirmation of how many people you're having at the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the countries that are doing it, or the cities, let's say, that are doing it, there's every chance that some of them will change their mind closer to the time anyway. Yep. So what's it worth? What's the confirmation right now, 2 months out, worth if the government then turn around and say, sod this? Like France, I honestly thought, maybe because I'm in a bubble here in the UK and how quickly we're rolling out vaccinations. I mean, we're a small country, so logistically it's quite straightforward. We don't have as much of a rural population as some of these countries maybe do. But I thought that other European countries getting back into a stronger lockdown was not going to happen. France did the other week. So it's not impossible that we will in a few weeks. It's not impossible. So I don't think it's unlikely, but not impossible. I don't think any commitment that anybody's making 2 months out is worth anything. So if I was the Irish FA, I'd just be like, yeah, sod it. All right, fine. You want us to commit to 25%? We're committed to 25%. Now, if UEFA are putting in stupid rules where if you now renege on your deal, you are liable for this, that, and the other. It's just stupid. It's just stupid.
I think part of the reason UEFA wants some sort of confirmation is over tickets, something else we'll come back onto. So they basically want to know how much money they've got to refund. He's part of it.
Understandable, yeah.
But if you, I mean, what's the importance of it? Let's say, what do you do if Dublin say, okay, yeah, fine, we'll do 25%. And then come end of May, Dublin go, actually, we're in a much stronger position now. We can do 50% capacity. What are you going to do? Not let them do it.
Resell the tickets. What about the people that have already been refunded? Do they get priority?
Or if it goes the other way and they turn round on health grounds and say, look, we can't let anyone in, which is the right decision if that's their circumstance. So, okay, you've got to refund everyone and it's behind closed doors. I find the pressure being put on these cities is ridiculous. And the first thing is the decision in March should have been, the common sense approach was that this was a laughable suggestion to try and organise a tournament this way in the first place, before Correct. A pandemic. To now do it now, even still, it's like, oh, we had this great 60th anniversary idea for the Euros. Why is the 60th anniversary so important in the first place? Well, like everything with UEFA and FIFA, it's all about money, isn't it? How many different nations can we get paid off in this? How many nations can we get involved? You know, let's be honest, Azerbaijan is probably not going to get a major tournament anytime soon. But they've got a massive stadium in Baku. Okay, let's get them involved. I mean, like, there wasn't enough moaning about the Europa League final being in Baku,
exactly,
for example.
Yeah.
But okay, look, they're part of Europe. They've got every right to have a game. But a country like that, probably because of stadia, wouldn't be able to host a tournament. But doing it this way, and the same applies to Ireland, actually, other than the Aviva, Croke Park, and I'm not sure there's any others that would fit UEFA stadium criteria for a tournament. They wouldn't be able to host a tournament. They would have to share with England, Scotland, Wales, whatever, if they wanted to get involved in that way. So this gets nations like that involved in the tournament. And I get that. But the sensible idea in March would have been to say, this is silly. Can we have it in a country where it looks like they can either have 50% of fans, whatever, or do it in a safe environment somewhere in one country?
Yeah, I just feel like,
idea, wouldn't it?
Yeah, fanless in London. Like, London's a big city. Not only is it a big city, you've got Wembley, your new place, Emirates, London Stadium, Stamford Bridge, Twickenham, if you really wanted to use it, bish, bash, bosh, job done. Like every fans, whatever you can get in and not everybody in one place. Happy days.
Yeah, quite. I mean, it wouldn't have to be restricted to just London, would it? But England would have been one idea. There's a few other countries. I mean, Hungary's going to come up in this. And again, stadium might have been an issue, but Russia got the experience of having the World Cup very recently, which I think pre-tournament, most of us were like, how have they got this? Again, it's on money, all the racist things that were going on in Russia, but they had a very good tournament out there, in fairness.
Yeah, and they kept the racism, to be fair, relatively under control and it didn't kick off.
And they look like they're in a position to be letting in sort of at least 50% of capacity, and St. Petersburg is the host city from Russia during the tournament. We'll just put it down. It's a massive country as well in terms of location for nations, etc., in terms of training, etc. It's another thing you have to factor in. Not that obviously England wouldn't have the capability to have 24 nations come and train in the country. Of course,
it's not exactly difficult to get to Birmingham, mate. Hour and a half up the road, you know what I mean? 2 hours. So expand it even beyond London. But we're trying to fix a problem here that they're not going to go, they're not going to do.
Another city at risk is Bilbao in Spain, in the Basque region. They said that they could hold 25% of capacity in Bilbao's arena. But the Spanish FA have since come back and said, we're not sure that information is correct because that particular region in Spain is still really struggling. So Bilbao could lose games. Ironically, Dublin and Bilbao, I think they're paired together in the same group in Spain, the Sweden's group, I believe. So it could be that both the host cities from that particular group could change. The other two cities that are at risk are Munich. Germany have been very cautious all the way through this process on a number of things. Many of us would have seen recently in the Champions League. They've not let teams particularly go and play there, for example, even to travel in on exemptions. And there's mixed messages coming out of Rome as well, which is due to host the opening game between Italy and Turkey on June 11th. And there's mixed signals from them in terms of who you believe. Some are saying, yep, 25% capacity, no problem. Others are saying, no, we're not allowing that at the moment. So it might be kind of a bit of a clash between government and FA at the moment. So Munich and Rome are in a better position than Dublin and Bilbao. What might arguably help Dublin and Bilbao in terms of keeping the games is that there's the question marks over Rome and Munich. And if UEFA decide to let Rome and Munich keep the games, is it fair that they would take it away from Dublin and Bilbao? And let's be honest, do they really want to piss off the football associations of Germany and Italy, which are obviously two of the most powerful under the UEFA Confederate flag? Whereas it might be a bit easier to take away from Dublin and Bilbao. Thing is, though, I think about it and I think, take Dublin as an example. Let's say they can't have any fans in the ground. What's the use for Dublin of keeping the games other than, okay, the games are in Dublin, it gets a bit more exposure to the stadium and stuff.
Exactly.
What's the point?
Yeah, exactly.
What's the point?
I couldn't agree with you more. It's like, why are these games going to these places?
Why is it so important? I know why Dublin want to keep the games, obviously, if they can get fans in the ground, etc. I'd think it's more about the publicising of city and nation, etc. But if it can't be what kind of festival of football, if you like, at a UEFA tournament, what's the point? What's the use for Dublin? If you're not going to have overseas tourism coming into the city, you're obviously not going to allow people in, presumably. If the ground's going to be empty, what is the actual use for the Irish FA of keeping the game? I don't know. Do they receive a certain fee from UEFA?
It's a kudos.
I don't know how it works. So one of the things I did look at was the nations that bid for the tournament originally, because obviously if these cities do get stripped from hosting the games, where could they go? So the host cities that originally bid for games in the Euros that didn't get passed off as one of the named 12 cities were Minsk in Belarus, which was deemed stadium-wise wouldn't be up to criteria. Sofia in Bulgaria, they wanted to increase the capacity of the national stadium.
I'm assuming they haven't done now.
I'm not sure, actually, in Sofia, but that's where, obviously, England played, where they had the racist chants a few years ago and stuff. Yeah. And, I mean, I wouldn't call that a modern purpose-built stadium, to be very honest. I'd be surprised if it was up to kind of UEFA's A-category listing of stadiums. Jerusalem in Israel, which I know has been redone quite recently. Skopje in Macedonia, which is interesting because they have qualified, North Macedonia, but I think their stadium was rejected. It only holds 33,000. It was rejected on those grounds. And the other two interesting ones, which I think are more likely, is the Friends Arena in Stockholm, which is part of that group. So Sweden are in that group with the cities of Dublin and Bilbao. So I could definitely see Stockholm taking over as a city potentially. And the other one is a Millennium Stadium in Cardiff, Wales. And Cardiff was the basically City 13. It missed out in the vote to Hampden Park by one vote. So it was the 13th city. So you'd think it'd be straight on standby. Now, Wales are obviously in the group with Italy. So Rome could get removed from Wales's group. The problem is, if you added the Millennium Stadium, are you going to pair Cardiff with Azerbaijan? You literally couldn't get two countries further away from each other in Europe. So that wouldn't particularly make sense, no. Would it?
And you've suddenly got games in Wales, Scotland and England. But you're going to remove... But what's the closest city to all of them is probably Dublin. But you're going to remove Dublin. So you're making... Yeah, like Azerbaijan's over there, Dublin's over here. It just is illogical.
Well, the whole idea originally between the host nations was that if you qualified, you automatically go into the group where your city was allocated. So that's why it was always the case that if England and Scotland both qualified, they were going to be in the same group because Wembley and Hampden Park got paired together. So the Millennium Stadium in theory could get added, but it's probably more likely to be that group with Spain and Sweden rather than actually host Wales matches in itself. I don't see how they could pair Wales and Azerbaijan from the travel perspective, because I think it's Wales themselves already have to go from Azerbaijan to Rome and back to Azerbaijan. You're going to make them go Azerbaijan to Wales and back to Azerbaijan and then potentially somewhere else for the last 16 as well. That's too much from a travel perspective.
It's difficult. And the games we know in tournaments are 3, 4, 5 days apart. It's not like they're spread out weeks apart.
There is a suggestion that obviously we could get two or three stadiums added within another nation, such as England. I have heard strong rumours from within the Tottenham community recently that White Hart Lane has openly approached UEFA and said Tottenham are ready to host games, potentially.
Daniel Levy's always ready to top up the bank account, mate.
If Daniel Levy can see money, Daniel Levy's all over it. But obviously, from a stadium perspective, obviously Tottenham with 62,000 seats, etc., is obviously ready to host that kind of game. And obviously, access level-wise, in terms of passing COVID tests, etc., I've already spoken in the past, Tottenham's technological advances around the stadium is going to be better than even, say, Wembley's,
of course,
for example.
Yeah.
So Tottenham could well come under consideration. I don't know if someone like Old Trafford, Manchester, massive stadium. I think Millennium Stadium Cardiff, to be honest, they should be asking questions, even if it's a case that they didn't host Wales games. So there are certain nations that have said at the moment that they'll host more than the 25% allocation, which was the kind of minimum requirement. So St. Petersburg and Russia and Baku in Azerbaijan have confirmed they'll host capacities of 50%. Budapest in Hungary have said they are aiming to have 100% full capacity. We've obviously seen a number of European games. I think Tottenham, Man City and Liverpool have all played there during this kind of second part of the UEFA season, having neutral venues in Budapest. They want to have 100% capacity, but with strict entry requirements for spectators. Amsterdam, Bucharest, Copenhagen and Glasgow will be hosting 25% to 33% of stadium capacity. London has confirmed a minimum capacity of 25% for the first three group matches, which works out at 22,500. So that's the expectation for England's three group games. And they're hopeful, because Wembley obviously has the semi-finals and final as well, they're hopeful of having 50% capacity because the restrictions on the UK, the next wave could be lifted, I think it's 3 days after England plays Scotland.
June the something or other.
In the second group stage, and they wouldn't be able to put it in place for England's final group game, which I believe is the next day. But for the semi-final one, they couldn't guarantee it, basically, because if it got halted, you've got 22,500 tickets that are going to have to be refunded in 24 hours. You couldn't do it. But they're hopeful for the semi-final and the final, they'll be able to sell an additional 22,500 tickets. and have capacity for the semi-final and final up to 45,000 at Wembley.
21st of June, James, is the date for that.
Yes, thank you. Mm. Should we not just move the semi-final and final to Budapest if they can have 100% capacity?
No, well, can they have 100% capacity safely? I don't feel confident. The reason I feel confident in London and the UK is because my opinion is that the rate that vaccinations are being rolled out, like you've already, Enfield, where you live, I'm not giving everyone James's actual home address before we get fans mobbing you outside, is way ahead, mate, in terms of getting through people. They're already at your age group, so...
I know, because my left arm is still hurting 48 hours later.
and my borough, which is around the corner, is not far behind. The UK is flying through, mate. So I don't see a situation where we won't be hitting these dates. If anything, I think they might be a bit quicker, potentially, if the numbers drop well. But that's a bold prediction to say we're going to come out of some of these restrictions early. I think that even if they could, they probably wouldn't. So I feel confident here. When Budapest turn around and say that they can take 100% capacity, I would really want to know why. Like, are the cases that low? Is the transmission rate that low? Is the vaccination program particularly good? How good even is their track and trace and all the rest of that kind of stuff? Because America had a massive problem where cases were going unreported and what have you. So difficult. And then you've got situations where Brazil, in a completely unrelated country, 4,000 people a day are dying, not getting corona, dying. So I'm very skeptical. And when countries say things like 100% and so on, I'm not convinced, although I am
no,
here.
And
it's only because I don't have information. Here I know what's going on because I'm here. I'm in this country. I see the news reports. There I don't. So, yeah, I don't know if they should. It feels, in theory, a great statement, right? Let's just move it to Budapest because they can take 100%. The reality ain't there.
Someone listening to this podcast has got tickets for a game at the European Championships, and that the next information is quite important, and particularly possibly for Welsh fans who may have a ticket in Azerbaijan, for example. Next Monday, the 19th of April, is the cutoff for these four cities to provide UEFA with further additional information. So Dublin, Bilbao, Rome and Munich. Additional information next Monday on the 19th in terms of how many fans they can have inside the ground. And it's from there we'll probably get some answers next week in terms of clarity if they're going to remain host cities or not. Next Thursday, the 22nd, is also an extremely important date for ticket holders. It is the last opportunity to notify UEFA and say, I no longer want my ticket. So there are going to be people, for example, I don't know, just randomly have a game in Glasgow. Let's just say hypothetically, for whatever reason, you're not comfortable travelling from England to go to Glasgow for the game, whatever. 22nd of April is the last opportunity to notify UEFA and say you want a refund on your tickets. My understanding is if you do that, you will get a refund. It's not going to be a problem because the way they're looking at the moment is they've probably got 52,000 seats sold for Hampden Park for each group game. If you decide you want a refund, that's going to take one less problem away from UEFA. They'll just give you the money back. Let's work on a situation that, take Hampden Park as an example. I think it's 52,000 seats of capacity because I think they've said they'll have 13,000 fans for the group games. If, obviously, not enough tickets are returned and Hampden Park can go ahead and hold 13,000 tickets, let's say they've got 30,000 tickets sold for those group games. So I think they've held a number back because the four nations who qualified via the Nations League playoff route, they're not even actually able to buy tickets. So Scotland, for example, until May, there is a reservation on tickets for those four nations, Scotland, Macedonia, Slovakia, and I'm going to forget the other nation at the moment, but you get the principal idea. If there's 30,000 tickets sold for Hampden Park and it can only hold 13,000, those 30,000 will go into a ballot. And obviously just under half are going to get confirmation that they're okay to have the ticket and the other half are going to obviously get refunded. That's how it's going to work across the board in terms of ticket allocation. So the 22nd of April is the last opportunity, because I think from that point, if you then decide to say, oh, I can't go, you ain't getting refunded. That's what I read into that. Now, there's certain countries that are obviously making specific access into nations for these countries for ticket holders at European Championship games. So I mentioned Baku, which is where two of Wales's group games are due to be. The other one is meant to be against Italy in Rome. International travel to Baku is not permitted for non-residents at all. However, ticket holders who are citizens and or residents of Turkey, Switzerland, which are the other two nations in that group with Wales and Italy, and the United Kingdom, plus quarterfinal countries that could play there because they'll host a quarterfinal as well, will be able to obtain a visa. They will be eligible for a quarantine exemption with proof of negative COVID-19 test results. So, ironically, Wales fans who have tickets in Baku, unbelievably, might still be able to go. For those looking to go to Budapest in Hungary, as a ticket holder travelling to Budapest, you won't be required to quarantine. Other restrictions, such as two negative COVID-19 tests, will apply. And in St. Petersburg, exemptions for ticket holders are also being developed. In addition, if you're going to Bucharest in Romania, you may be able to benefit from the quarantine exemption if you can present a negative COVID-19 test result and limit your stay to less than 3 days. But as it looks at the moment, these are likely to be, so it's Romania, Hungary, Azerbaijan and Russia, look like they're probably going to be the only four nations that are going to accept fans from overseas. I don't know, Suj, in terms of where we're at with that, in terms of Wembley. Will we accept overseas visitors?
Dependent on the country. Depends where you're coming from. So certain countries we have travel bans with, certain countries not.
Are we going to let the Scots come or?
Whether we let them or not, they're coming, mate.
There you know, it's so true.
I don't know.
Let me tell you right now that when England play Scotland, do not be surprised if there's more Scottish fans in the ground than English fans. Mm. Let me tell you that right now.
Yeah. It depends on the country. Certain countries we're allowing in, certain countries we're not. It depends. People will blag it on visas, business visas and that kind of thing. Like, you're allowed to travel if it's for work or if you've got specific circumstances and can prove it. Like, you're allowed to travel for a funeral or a wedding or whatever. People will blag their paperwork and just get their way in if they've got tickets and what have you. But it depends on the country.
If White Hart Lane was to get tickets, which is, or let's say they got Spain, Sweden's group, for example, they got three of the group games in now, and perhaps even last 16 match, which in theory, there was a the route for England, I think if they won the group, would mean they play in Dublin in the last 16. If England were to play at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium in the last 16, would you apply for a ticket?
Yeah.
I fucking would.
Yeah, why not?
Without a shadow of a doubt.
It depends how many they're going to let in. If it's spaced out reasonably well, but to be honest with you, by then, I'm 99% sure I'll have been offered and have had the vaccine. So, you know, and so will the majority of people in and around me. So, yeah, I would. I've got nothing to lose.
If Tottenham Hotspur Stadium was hosting Sweden against Slovakia, would you apply?
Yeah, I think I would.
Yeah, me too. Fuck it.
I think I would. Yeah, why not? Why not?
I think it'd be science experience. Basically, I think where it's at is, unless you've already got a ticket for the venues that we know of, you've got next to no chance. Unless you're from a nation like Scotland, where their allocations have been held back. So for group games, unless you're like from Scotland, who haven't had their allocation, you've got, getting a chance, an English ticket at the moment would be next to nothing. But if it opened for, I don't know, would I as a season ticket holder at Tottenham get a chance to get a ticket? Mind you, I can't even get in for the fucking Tottenham game.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't even want to.
Would I get a chance?
Quite possibly. Worth considering. I think this will unfold in the next week or so. So like Jay's mentioned, 19th, they've got to obviously give their state of affairs to UEFA and what they can and can't do. And we'll know very quickly how this unfolds. All I would say, mate, is either way, it's going to be a mess. Either way, something's going to be a mess.
Probably, yeah. I mean, I don't think we could rule out the possibility that we're saying, yeah, Wales fans in theory can go to Azerbaijan at the moment, but that could very quickly change at very short notice. I think we're aware of that. I don't believe that anybody's really... If you were a Wales ticket holder at the moment and you've got tickets for saying Azerbaijan, which no doubt definitely Welsh fans will have, I don't know where you'd be at the moment in terms of... Are you even comfortable doing the travel?
There will be a couple of thousand hardcore that will. Of course there are. There's a couple of thousand that will, but the majority will not be bothered, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Do you want to tell the listeners what they've got to look forward to this week? Because I do think it's going to be a good one. I'm looking forward to this week.
Yeah. Tomorrow, game week 31 review after the Monday night football games. Me and Suj will be discussing the 10 games from the weekend. There will be no mention of Tottenham at all. They're not even going to mention it. Wednesday, Sky Fantasy Football. Thursday's Clash of the Correspondences, Wolves versus Sheffield United with Bradley Parker and Ben Tomo Thompson. Don't worry, we're not going to spend half hour talking about FPL assets. There'll be a lot of other stuff, perhaps around the ownership of Wolves, Sheffield United, we'll be touching on Thursday. Friday, I'm going to have to speak about Tottenham because Ricky Saunders, our Tottenham correspondent, is coming on for a bit of a special. We're going to talk Tottenham FPL assets for double game week 32. We'll be talking ownership, Mourinho, what's going on at the football club. It might end up being a chat between two mates on the state of Tottenham, and we're going to invite you to be a part of it.
Have you got Ricky's address? Because I'll send him a bottle of whiskey to prepare.
He'll need something.
Absinthe, then, will be the one. Yeah, and what about
the best way?
What about for the Patreons who you can find more about our Patreon exclusive podcast, one every single day on patreon.com/planetfpl.
Today, Q&A for our patrons as ever every Monday. Tomorrow is Tottenham. Yes, we're going to talk about it. I'm numb to it now, Suj, yeah. But you're quite the opposite. It is on, mate.
I feel in with a big shout
for Tottenham.
There's so much to talk about in Tottenham from a West Ham point of view. I think.
Let's just talk about West Ham. I'm happy with that.
Quick touch on Nobes as 400 appearances. I want to talk about West Ham's spine. Our best central defender, our best holding midfielder, and our best forward is our spine. None of them are playing right now. And there's so much more to cover off why we can't hold on to Leeds. Well, we can hold on to them, but not well. Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be a good show tomorrow. I'm looking forward
to it. Definitely putting your arsehole through the ringer, mate.
Yeah.
The fuck? Wednesday, Ask James stream is going to be exclusive for patrons this week. Like, they didn't have enough of me for 4.5 hours during our watch along yesterday during the Super Sunday games. Thursday will be quiz. Friday will be our game week 32 preview podcast. Additional articles / videos at advanced tier every day this week as well. And from the basic tier, my Ask James stream will be available to all patrons on Wednesday.
Lovely jubbly. I hope you enjoyed this show. Do share and like it and all the rest of that stuff that you can do on social media. We'll be back at you tomorrow. Stay safe. Ciao for now.
Thanks, everyone. Cue music, please, Manchild. Come on, England!
The Fantasy Football Show.
Sports Social Podcast Network.